This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNC, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Let's talk a little bit of Panthers. We have moved past Bone, our annual coaching search. All right, we moved past that. And now we're a week and a half out from the draft. And anytime you want to talk Panthers, we got a great group covering this team. Sheena Quick, one of the most enjoyable to talk with about the Carolina Panthers. And Sheena joins us here on the Mac and Bone Show. My bad. That's not Sheena. Here's Sheena Quick. Sheena!
I thought she had enough of this already. Thought that was it.
I wasn't sure, Sheena, if you left us early there. I didn't know. What's going on? How you been?
Good morning. I'm good. How you guys been?
We're doing good. We've got a week and a half till this draft. We have talked so much about these wide receivers. We're probably not stopping anytime soon. It is kind of a glamorous, right, fun position to talk about. Do you... I'll make it a two-part question. Do you have an intel or a gut feeling on, you know, the receivers the Panthers might be leaning towards? And then the other question is just you personally. Do you have a favorite of that group that we expect to be in the second round?
Well, the thing is, they've been targeting a group of wide receivers because this is such a deep position with this draft class and also tight ends. A lot of fans want them to ramp up the tight end room. I don't think they do it with the 33rd or 39th pick. I really do think that one, if not both of those picks, will be spent bringing in wide receivers. And they have a lot to choose from that will fall out of that first round. Now, my personal favorite is Keon Coleman because he's an FSU guy.
Okay, I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, he's a playmaker. He's really good at those 50-50 balls. There's some concerns about separation. That's something that he can work on, you know, when he gets to the next level. And that's an issue that plagued everybody except for Adam Thielen last year when it comes to the Panthers wideout room. So if they don't go Keon Coleman, that would be the reason why, because they might not see as much separation as they would like on film. But I think that he deserves a really good look.
Outside of wide receivers and tight ends in the draft, what's next on your list you think they need to address? Is it edge? Is it corner? Is it center? On the Sheena priority list, what's after the playmakers?
Every position you just said. And that's mainly because that team has so many – it already had so many holes going into this offseason on the wideouts – oh, I'm sorry, on the offensive side of the ball. They talked about switching Austin Corbett to center. That makes me a little bit nervous because that is a big responsibility. If you haven't been playing that position at the pro level, you're literally touching the football on every play.
No doubt. And you're kind of the leader of that line ultimately too.
Yeah. You know?
Which I guess he's got that part down pat though. I think the leadership.
Yeah, the leadership is there, but the physical demands of that position, I don't think we will really know. That's not even something you can pinpoint and see whether or not he'll be good at that during training camp, because nothing simulates a game like a game when it comes to, I'm not going to say the NFL, but definitely in the NFL. On the defensive side of the ball, where they thought that they were, you know, they thought they were straight, they bought back that same defensive staff that was the only bright spot in last year's season, but then there was like a mass exodus of people. I like the Jadeveon Clowney signing, obviously a vet. He's proven, he's a leader, and you're going to need those in the locker room. They extended Derrick Brown, which was a must-do. That was like that should have been number one on the priority list, so they won't have any of that looming over their heads going into OTAs or training camp or any of those things. So that was a really, really big step in putting their stamp on this team by Dave Canales and Dan Morgan. But cornerback depth continues to be an issue on this team for like the fourth straight season. They have not picked up They have not picked up J.C. Horn. Yeah. What's going on with me this morning? I guess because I haven't had my coffee.
Same thing's going on with me. Don't worry about it.
We've made a career out of this early morning stuff. Yeah.
I'm like, who are these people I'm naming that are not Panthers players? But they have not picked up J.C. Horn's fifth-year option yet. They brought back Troy Hill. But, again, that's an issue. That is a position that continues to lack depth. And with J.C. Horn's injury history, you have to beef up that cornerback room. Of course, Stephon Gilmore is still out there. And he's a big name that the Panthers are looking to reel in to bring him back home to Carolina. I don't know that there's been too much progress on that. I do know that they were speaking with him a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure where they are in the process of him or if he's ruled out a return or what's going on with that. Edge, like you said, linebacker. There's just so many holes on this team. It's not going to be a one season fix.
No, it's not. And there's a lot of places they can go. They probably need to stay true to that board, right? And just there's a lot of places that you can go with this draft. We're talking to Sheena Quick, one of the best at covering the Panthers here in Charlotte. Aww. Check her out on Twitter at Sheena_Marie3. Sheena, I'm getting a personal question asked of you here. All right.
There we go.
Okay. Don't get scared, but we're good here. All right. Somebody says, I heard her raving on FSU, but I thought she ran track for NC State. Did you go to both schools? Were you like one of the early transfer portal pioneers? What was up with your track career?
Actually, I did. I ran at both schools. I started at NC State, but I'm a nerd, so I came in with almost a semester's worth of credits from AP classes, so I still had eligibility after finishing my degree early.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
How about that?
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. And with track, you have to be there through the summer anyway, so I did summer school, so that put me even further ahead.
So what do you do when Florida State plays NC State in anything, like especially football? Like, who do you root for?
Well, football, when I was married, I rooted for NC State because my cousin played there. But now I just hope that it's a good game and no one gets hurt. But to be honest with you, the pendulum swings on whoever's having the stronger season. Like, with FSU being undefeated, I would not have wanted NC State to knock them out of the college playoff. You know what I mean? But other than that, when all things are equal and considered, I want both teams to play well and to come out of the game healthy.
That makes sense.
Sheena, you're talking to two fellow great athletes here that know a lot about track and field here. What did you run? What was your events that you did?
I ran the 100 meter dash, the 100 hurdles, and relays.
Oh, so you were getting it. You were getting
that's more than we did, Mac. That's more than we did.
I might be able to compete with Sheena Bone if they put an IPA and a cheeseburger at the end of the day. That'd be my only chance to stay in the same area code. Sheena,
to bring it. Definitely have slowed down. The years have slowed me down for sure.
Haven't we all?
We hope that hasn't slowed down at all is Deontay Johnson, the new Panthers wideout acquired from Pittsburgh. It feels like there's some people that are really fired up about him. Other people are kind of looking how it ended in Pittsburgh and not really in a glowing way. What's your view on Deontay's acquisition and what he can do for this passing game?
I think that any off-field things that people have concerns about, everybody deserves a fresh start. Obviously, he was ready to get into a new environment. I think that Dave Canales has a way with these players where they respect him. I don't know if it's just his demeanor. Like, he doesn't give me used car salesman. He doesn't give me preachy, you know, rah-rah, let's have a high-spirited pep talk. Like, he doesn't do any of those things. And those are the coaches that the Panthers have had in the past. So I get the reluctance. No, seriously, like, I get the reluctance. But I do think that this fresh start could be good for him.
Definitely. By the way, when you said used car salesman, I may have been thinking of a certain coach here. All right, we're gonna leave it at that. But
please don't think he's gonna be on Good Morning Football. Like, they said on the Mac and Bone show that I'm a used car salesman, and I don't understand why Carolina won't leave me alone.
Oh God,
Mac, I don't know what guy you're talking about. I have a car. You have a car. We all drive cars, you know.
All right. I want to go back in the past a little bit on this. You were a big, you know, fan of Brian Burns, and you had, like I was, and we talked about this in the past. We both kind of got bothered by, I don't know, I thought there were disrespectful tones from fans, you know, towards him based on how good of a player he was. How do you feel about everything now? Because it hit me hard when the trade was made and what they got for him, and then Luvu left at the same time. But I will admit, I kind of see the plan. And, hey, they wanted to spend money in different areas, right? They want to spend money to protect Bryce. How do you feel now about the fact that Burns and Luvu were let go? What do you think?
Well, I think the biggest issue with the Brian Burns trade from people that were, you know, that didn't have, like, you know, a positive reaction to it is what you got in exchange. Yeah. And they're tired of seeing their first rounders and their, you know, one of their better players traded away and the Panthers not getting much in compensation. But to be honest with you, that's just an issue from the previous administration that, you know, Dan Morgan and Canales inherited. And I think that they did the best they could given the status and the stage that things were in when they took over. At that point, Brian Burns had played all year without an extension. It just put them behind the eight ball. So I don't feel a way about, I mean, I get it. You have to trade. You have to do what you have to do. If you don't have the money to pay them, then you do look to trade. But it's just what they got in exchange for them that people have an issue with. They wanted at least one first rounder, especially when you turn down two first round picks before that were offered for him. So that's it's messy. What I do not like is when I'm not going to say Panthers fans, when fans, period, turn on a player as if they're trash, they're not good, they're this and that and third, because at one point you were excited about that player.
Yeah,
money aside, like, you know, everybody wants to get paid. Everybody wants to get paid what they're worth. And at the end of the day, this is still a business, and it's still these guys' livelihood.
Well, they're the ones out there risking that livelihood to play this game. You know what I mean? And these contracts, you know it, Sheena, these contracts, they're not guaranteed like the NBA.
They're not guaranteed.
So
they're
they got to get theirs, and they got to get their signing bonus and that money that can't, they can't be taken away. Bone and I talk about this all the time. I'll wrap it up here with this question. But you took us down this path, so I want to see what you think.
Yeah.
This town, and it happens a bit with the Hornets too, but really it happens with the Panthers. It feels like we spend a lot of time in this town as fans, like, bashing our best players. Like, we've had so many bad players, Sheena, in this town that we could get mad about, but, like, the ones that are the best ones, but people are like, oh, they dropped off, or, hey, they're not worth that money. Do you notice that?
And it's usually not until the guys want to get paid. I didn't see as much Brian Burns slander until the contract issues came up.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I didn't. And again, I said yesterday when I saw it might have been the day before yesterday, the videos floating around about Jeremy Chinn and him having a chip on his shoulder and being a little disappointed in his time. Those guys have been through, what, 3 head coaches, 3-4 DCs and offensive coordinators. There's just been a lot of shuffle and no stability. And sometimes you have players that are collateral damage and get lost in the shuffle. Right now, for me, the player's still on the roster that has been a victim of that churn is Terrace Marshall Jr. You know, again, people are very excited about these. They and when it comes to, you know, bashing their stars, there were CMC slander when he was traded.
Yeah.
There was DJ Moore slander when he was traded. These people aren't trading. These players aren't trading themselves, and they absolutely deserve to get paid what they feel like they are worth. And obviously, other teams are willing to pay that. That's just like you're my coworker. I see you every day, and I know that your financial situation is you need to be paid more, and you're being underpaid where we are. I'm not going to look at you with animosity if you get a job across the street and they're paying you more
to
do the exact same thing.
Hey, good point, Sheena. Yeah. Hey, it was great talking to you. We woke you up early, but you delivered.
I had 3 kids. I've been up for a while.
Oh, say no more. Say no more. Sheena, quick.
She went on here just for us, Mac.
Okay.
Yeah, Sheena, wake up special
for us.
No,
not many will. All right. She is at Sheena, 2 E's, _Marie3 on Twitter and is a must Panther follow. Thank you, Sheena. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Just in case you missed it earlier this week on the Wes and Walker Show.
Stretching the imagination on what's possible for threes. Now Brandon Miller up the middle. An enormous right-handed finish. It's a Dr. Pepper dunk, and it's the full 2 liters. Brings the bench for Buzz City up to its feet. They are holding one another for support after the devastation unleashed by Brandon Miller.
What a great call from Sam. Do we not have the best play-by-play announcers, man? Sam Farber, Eric Collins, talking about a Brandon Miller jam. There was a lot of them this season. Let's talk more about it with the guy actually, you know, doing the whole slam dunk and stuff. Brandon Miller joining us here at the Spectrum Center via the Body Works Plus guest hotline. How much better is it when you go back and watch your dunks with the background of a Sam Farber or Eric Collins? I know you do it. I know you do it, and I know you do it multiple times.
I ain't gonna lie, it's the second playback. You know, Eric Collins. You know, everybody. You know, the reactions. It's definitely the better time is the second time to watch it. I think the first time you don't give it, you know, enough justice until you watch it over, and you gotta just see all the details. You know, just hear all the details. I think that's what makes it better.
Yeah, you were really living in the moment again when you were listening back to that call. I got it. Well, this was a Hornets fan based debate. It felt like it on Wes and Walker, Locked On Hornets too. We didn't know if that was the best. We felt like that was your best dunk. But do you like that one better than the Walker Kessler one?
We've had this conversation. Like me and my teammates had this conversation. I feel like. At first, I was leaning more towards the Walker Kessler one until I started watching, you know, the one in Atlanta, you know, more than five times, and just
probably
started paying attention to it. I think what kind of made that one better than Walker Kessler was the setup, the crossover, and then, you know, of course, the finish. I think I'm leaning more towards the Atlanta one now.
Okay. Well, also, you led the league. You were getting your John Moran on in, like, the almost dunks. And then you had a couple as the season went on as well. A couple fun plays. We can ask you about some of your other favorite moments. I did want to get to just how you would describe your rookie season overall. As it comes to an end, what would you describe it like?
You know, I think individually my rookie season was great. You know, unfortunately, we couldn't get, you know, the amount of wins that we needed possible to – you know, make the playoffs. You know, I think that kind of is going to help us for the, you know, next year in the long run. You know, our goal, which is making the playoffs and winning the finals. So I think next year is going to be a great year.
Brandon Miller joining us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. And Brandon, you had the fourth most three-pointers for a rookie. And did you think that part of your game was going to transition so quickly? And if not, which part of your game did you feel like would translate the quickest for you?
I think the most the part of my game that's going to translate the fastest, I think, you know, the ability to score on three levels. You know, I've been doing that for a very long time now. Not just that, I think the ability to, you know, to guard, you know, multiple positions. I think, you know, some games I was on, you know, some teams' best, you know, scores at point of times. And I feel like, you know, just having that this year of you know, experience under my belt is going to help us and the team for, you know, next season.
All right, so what is at the top of the list when you go back into the lab, man, to start working on your game for next season, the follow-up? You had a great rookie season. I'm sure you want to follow it up. No sophomore jinxes, man. So what's going to be that top thing on your list to be able to work on and get that better?
The top thing on my list right now is, you know, building muscle mass, gaining weight. I think that's one of the parts of my game that kind of struggles. So I think once I get that, I'm going to be great. You know, just being able to take bumps and contacts through 82 games, I think that's an important thing to, you know, add to you know, someone's body, NBA player's body for sure. It's just, you know, muscle mass.
Brandon Miller joining us here at the Spectrum Center via the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Brandon, a little bit different situation for you than other rookies, really because of all the health problems that the team suffered. And it felt like you were asked to play a lot of different roles. If you, like, I was looking at some of the 10-game splits for each of your different roles that you would have, at least with some of the injuries, and just the usage goes up and down just for whatever you're asked to do. How difficult was it to navigate? Because you're talking about a lot of injuries this season, man. Like, not many teams go through that.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying, I think, you know, I know the injuries kind of played a big part in, you know, our season and our lineup. So, you know, there's a point in time I was starting at the two, but sometimes I was starting at the three. I think it was kind of, you know, different for me just, you know, starting at, you know, two different positions. I think you have to, you know, of course you got to learn more plays, but still going to have to guard, you know, some of the best players in the NBA. So I think that was kind of my biggest adjustment was just, you know, playing the two and the three.
Brandon, looking back at your season and its totality, what was your welcome to the NBA moment, and what was your I belong in this league moment?
I don't think I had a welcome to the NBA moment, but I think
we're going back to the dog, aren't we?
Yeah, I think Atlanta for sure. The dunk for sure. Was one of the moments that I felt I'm going to be here for a long time.
All right, so let's stay there for 1 second, because a lot of players today, we know that everybody talks about the friendly AAU atmosphere of the league, and you don't get those guys that's really looking for bodies like the guys did back in the day, talking about going to the rack, dunking on somebody. Is that something that you set out to do? Do you look at a team and say, oh, they got this guy, I might want to catch him at the rim tonight? Or is it something when you're out there playing and somebody might say something to you sideways or say something to one of your teammates, and you're like, yo, I'm going to go get him before this night is over with, or try to at least.
That's funny. So just going into this game, I knew we had something, you know, to prove. You know, we lost to them last time, and it wasn't pretty. And, you know, Grant Williams got dunked on it. So I think just going into the game was just, I think just playing hard as you can and just trying to get a win, and just letting the game come to me. And, you know, after I dunked on him, he asked me, he was like, man, was that for when I dunked on Grant Williams? And we just started laughing. So, you know, the NBA is just not all about basketball. I think it's more than just the game. You know, it's friendships, love, and, you know, of course, basketball.
I like the idea of, Brand, don't tell me if this is true or not, but I like the idea of you having a list in your room that you cross off. And, okay, you got Grant, we got Bruno. Check. It's Brandon Miller joining us at the Spectrum Center. A couple more questions before we get you out of here. You mentioned the friendships and stuff. I think part of the reason the fan base loves you so much, despite having a great rookie year, it's also getting on your teammates. Like, there was the clip, there's a few clips that went around on social media where you call guys out for not getting back in transition. How do those conversations go, if you have them, in the locker room after the fact? How do they go for some of the vets that you might call out?
Like I said, you know, just me being a young leader, I feel like you have to, you know, lead and, you know, have those tough conversations like that, you know, where you're, you know, you're on your teammates, and I feel like you'll want your teammates to be on you just as hard as I'm on. So I think that's kind of one of the things, you know, I take pride in, is just the leadership part, leading vocally. And, you know, I think that's I think I did a great job on that this year.
You did. A lot of fans loved it, too. Final thing, I know Brian's going to get mad at us. We got to get you out of here soon. But I will say, we know about your favorite play. We know you love the dunk. We all did. Is there a favorite game? There's a few to choose from there as well.
Paul George.
Against your GOAT.
Definitely. Here. At the crib. you know, he put on a show. You know, it was all love after the game, but, you know, during the game, it was, you know, like we're enemies. You know, we're going back and forth, trading buckets. You know, I'm guarding him, he's guarding me. I think it was just, you know, it was definitely a great atmosphere in there that night. And I think that's all you ask for, is just come out there and compete at a high level and have fun with it.
Was there any banter? I know we said one more, but was there any banter between you guys back and forth with the whole you calling him your GOAT type of thing? Did he big up you, say, I appreciate that young fella, now I'm about to bust you up? Or during the game when he was guarding you, was he like, how's it like to have your GOAT guarding you, young fella?
it was a silent game. You know, I try not to talk a lot of trash. You know, I know he's not going to talk a lot of trash unless, you know, somebody has to get him going. You know, PG's a, you know, a great guy on and off the court. You know, I sat down and did a podcast with him. I think that was, you know, probably one of the best podcasts I done did. You know, just because, you know, my goal was in my presence. So it's kind of like, you know, you're not trying to act too fanned out, you know, in front of everybody. But, you know, I definitely got that picture after that podcast.
Of course, you have to. You have to. Hell of a rookie year, man. Brandon Miller joining us here at the Spectrum Center on the Bodyworks Plus guest hotline. Brandon, we're excited as hell to see what the future has in store. And we appreciate a good rookie year, and we appreciate you stopping by.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Awesome stuff, man. The former Alabama Crimson Tide member, Brandon Miller, joining us here at the Spectrum Center for Exit Interview Day.
This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
We are continuing on Wes and Walker here in the Spectrum Center for exit interview day. The Hornets wrapped up their season just yesterday against Cleveland, but they talked to us one more time before they hit the upcoming offseason. Grant Williams now joins us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Grant, how surprised are you when you reflect back on it all that you're going through exit interviews here in Charlotte instead of Dallas, Boston, somewhere else?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, you know, being able to, you know, understand what could potentially happen this upcoming season. What's expected, you know. I normally am playing right now. It's the first time ever missing the playoffs. So it's definitely a little weird having this much time off and not even going to the first round. But got to take full advantage of getting your body right and being prepared for the upcoming year.
We thought you might be here in Charlotte after the offseason. You were heavily linked. At least reports were out there that it was you or PJ coming back and forth. And then obviously it's weird that you switch at the trade deadline. But how much did you think you might be here in Charlotte during the offseason when negotiations were going on?
Yeah, it was a potential. I had a feeling that it was an option, but I think that it was more they were using it to leverage PJ. And then after, you know, this whole ordeal happened where I was in Dallas and then PJ was here and then the deadline happens and Dallas made that deal, I think they couldn't turn it down. So it was super cool to be able to say that I actually ended up here when it was a potential possibility here this summer, and then I came back.
Grant, you're a Queen City kid, play high school basketball here in Charlotte, man. Put yourself in the Grant Williams fan mode, looking at it as a kid from Charlotte, looking from the outside in at the Charlotte Hornets. What would you like to see this team do in the offseason that can get you guys into the mix next year and make you a contender for that play-in, playoff, whatever it may be?
It's pretty interesting that I've said this consistently, is that the team isn't that far off. You know, talent-wise, we should be right now. It's just a matter of being available and being a team that, you know, understands what it takes to win night over night. And that's my job of being here, is to teach these guys that and what it takes to win and really what all goes into it. Whether it's preparedness of your body, making sure that you're prepared to play night after night, whether it's having a routine, those little things, you know, being hopefully a good vet to these guys, because we're going to add another top whatever 10 pick, top 8 pick, and the talent will be there. It's just a matter of now being prepared to win every single night. So being a Grant Williams, like looking at it from a kid perspective, it's like, dang, the Hornets have a chance. Like, it's just a matter of do they squander it or they take advantage of the opportunity. And I think that if I have any control, we'll take advantage of it this summer.
Best and worst thing about playing back home in your hometown?
The best thing, I feel like, is just support. The love that you receive from not only their colleagues, but just to the arena and everything else. The worst is probably the level of tickets and dealing with the people that every single day. It's like, balancing, okay, like, I get these amount of seats, like, who comes to this game, who comes to that game, like, and also trying to understand, like, how often do you see your parents, you know, while you're in your city? Because before I was in Boston and I was in Dallas, so, like, they come visit me, versus now it's like, if I don't come over on Sunday and don't come over that Thursday or Wednesday or Monday, I might get a call or two. So trying to figure out the level of separation will also balance there.
All right, going back to basketball with Grant Williams here, Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ on Wes and Walker. Usage way up with Charlotte. If you look, here are the numbers, right? Based off every year, about to do the nerd stuff here. Your usage percentage going back to Boston, 10, 13, 13, 21, 29. It was 80 with Charlotte.
Oh, wow.
80. Yeah, that's according to Cleaning the Glass. Did it feel like that to you? Like you were more involved and the offense was running through you? And if so, how much did you like it?
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I enjoyed the playmaking side of things. So it wasn't necessarily that I was trying to score every possession, but being involved, whether it's screening, whether it's playing out of flash where you catch the ball and you can have guys play around you, definitely felt way more involved here in Charlotte than anywhere I've ever been, which is fun. You know, something that I don't know how it looks next season with LaMelo back and potentially Mark being back and stuff like that. So maybe it's unexpected to be consistently happening, but at the same time, I thought I took advantage of the spots that I had and looked good doing it and played well, and I'm thankful for that.
How quickly, it seems like you and Coach Clifford have a really strong bond. You talked about how you were caught off guard when he told the team that he was going to be stepping down, and he has had glowing reviews about you every time he's at the podium, seems to be reciprocated. How long did it take for you to build that relationship? Did you have any clue about what Coach Cliff was like before before?
Had no idea. But Kimba told me he was going to be one of my favorite coaches I've ever had. And I remember when he said that, I was like, really? And then when I got here, the first thing I remember Cliff doing, he cursed somebody out in front of me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I like this guy. You know, Cliff is just one of those guys that you respect and has really made an impact on this league as a coach. And he has a certain style and he's very, very competitive. And I think that, you know, that level of respect that I had for him only grew. And I was thankful to be able to play for him, even if it was for a short amount of time. And I hope that he can either be around or somewhat available because, you know, he's a tremendous human being and a tremendous coach.
All right, Miles said the same thing about Coach Clifford being on you in practice. Angriest you've ever seen him in just the 30 games you played here in Charlotte.
I just see him curse somebody. I remember he cursed me out one time. He said, because I think I ran by him and asked him to run a play. And he said, don't ask me to run no play, blah, 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 blah. And he cursed me out. And I was like, I appreciate that because some coaches would have, like, just like went behind the scenes or like been upset and stuff like that. But he was direct and he was right in front of my face. And I was like, you know what? I got to respect this. And you're right. And I looked back and watched the film and I had the play that I had asked to run. Let's just say it wasn't doing well that game. It had been doing well games before, but that game I hadn't been performing as well as I should have. So the fact that he was able to do that and be honest and I always say that's level of respect because if he's willing to do that and he expects the most out of you. And I love Cliff.
Grant Williams joins us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. And Grant, you talked about you guys potentially adding another top 10 pick. And then with everybody coming back healthy next season, what do you want your role to be when that happens, when this team is at full strength?
No, honestly, the role can be whatever it is as long as we're winning. My goal is just to be able to come in with a great mentality of competitive mind and understanding that from the start of the season, that's a matter of how you set the tone, both from training camp, but also from training camp with new staff, like, you know, having the level of aggression that you need, because whether it's a rookie head coach, whether it's a tenured coach, no matter who it is, whatever style they want to play, being able to fully engulf and try and learn it from this beginning. And so that role can be whatever it is as long as we're winning.
So, Grant, what is the right type of coach for this locker room, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think somebody that has a level of, like Cliff, too, the level of respect and communication style, but also someone who's a little bit modern in a sense of, like, play style, offense, and pace. You know, this team has the ability to be one of the faster-playing teams in the league, but also the level of discipline that's needed. You know, a coach that is mindful of, like, not just being able to play fast and not care how you play, but level of discipline and tone. So the coach, I feel like, is all determined on who can really communicate well with the group that we have, but also who can maximize the level of potential of our group.
Grant Williams joining us here at the Spectrum Center. Last couple comments before, I guess, you really officially kick off your offseason. Man, lots of drama around the Dallas situation. I know you were talking with Sham Sharani of The Athletic. You appeared on a podcast not too long ago discussing that situation. Lots of rumors, man. Like, annoying teammate coming into the season out of shape. Like, lots of stuff that seemed particularly critical, like really critical about you. And yet here everybody just has glowing comments here with the Hornets organization. How do those comments affect you? Do they at all when you hear some of that stuff with previous teammates or just even previous reports? I don't even know what teammates are talking about it a lot.
Yeah, there's certain things you can't control in this league. And sometimes, you know, when things don't go well, you know, somebody has to take the blame, which at the end of the day, I'm a person that can acknowledge when I don't do things correctly or if I do things correctly. And at the end of the day, I said, like, I have glowing reviews of my time in Dallas, so I'll never speak of anything poorly of those guys, especially the teammates, especially the staff. So of all those, whether rumors or anything else that were said, like, I try my best just to stay positive through it all, because at the end of the day, they're going to be temporary, and people who know you or people who work with you will have their opinion of you, and you'll see. I feel like everything comes to light at the end of the day. You know, when things aren't going well or things are bad, you could either make an escape and try and argue it at the moment, or you can just continue to operate as you have been and be professional. And all those rumors or conversations will be disproven, because you'll just be the person that you are. And I think that that's what happened, is that all those things, and I appreciate of the guys who standing up beside me, whether it was Luca, whether it's Jason, D. White, top to bottom, my teammates, and then even my other staff like Cliff and these guys speaking highly of me.
Grant, last thing I got for you, man, is playing with Luka Doncic. Got to know some type of story. What did you see from him where you knew, like, this guy's just different from a lot of other players in the NBA?
he's a monster, man. Luka is a guy that, you know, he's super competitive. Is a guy that you respect, because not only is, like, he can go from not, you think that he's had a night off or something like that, and then once somebody says something to him, like even his teammate, like I've called him out many times and probably too much sometimes, but I think that he steps up whenever he's called. And he's also a person that, you know, is a genuine guy where, like, he, like, having drinks with them, talking to him, he's a good dude. So I enjoy playing with Luka. He's one of the most talented players, if not the, that I've ever been around, and he could really lead a team to a championship, and I think they have potential to do that this year. The Clippers series is going to be probably the one I want to watch the most, because that's going to be a animal of a series. Kawhi, Luka, PG, like Kyrie, like it's going to be, that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, Luka scared him last time when he was real young. He scared the Clippers last time. That was a fun series to watch. That's Grant Williams here at the Spectrum Center joining us via the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Grant, good luck this offseason, the rest of the way, man. We appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Our buddy Curtis Strange back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Curtis, it's great to have you back, my man. How you been?
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I haven't left the house today. I'm whipped from the last week. The long hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I watch you every year. I know what goes into those broadcasts. I mean, just being around the course, it's exhausting in the best kind of way. But, man, it was a blast this weekend. And Scottie Scheffler was, I guess, the favorite going in. And he won this thing for the second time in 2 years, Curtis. Just how good is this kid?
Well, that says a lot. I mean, we kept talking, you know, well, especially Sunday morning when we did our Sports Center hits, that, you know, he's been the favorite every time he tees it up for 2 years now. And he continues to play well and seems to never have a bad day. I mean, he has a few of them, but not many. His record's phenomenal. And then he comes in, you know, he goes into Bay Hill and wins. And then, of course, you know, to back up another win with a win is you know, it's tough to do because it takes a lot out of you. And then he goes back and wins the Players the next week and takes a week off and finishes second in Houston and takes a week off and wins here. So, I mean, he's a robot. I mean, honestly, and he, And my whole point and your question was, you know, he continues to do this as the heavy favorite. And to do that speaks volumes for his, gosh, his confidence and his preparation and his daily routine. And it doesn't seem like anything bothers him, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's what I think is remarkable to me. And I was talking about this earlier during the height of Tiger's powers, let's say. And I don't want to make everything about Tiger, but you know, he was unflappable. You couldn't bother him, right? His demeanor on the course was something we've talked about for such a long time. Scottie's different in demeanor, but I think that the end result is the same in that there are people screaming at him. There are people wanting his autograph. There's so much going on. Never mind the potential birth of his first child. And he's just strolling casually, you know, from tee box to fairway to green and just doing it over and over and over again. And he seems robotic, I think, though, and maybe robotic is wrong, Curtis, but to your point a second ago, it just seems right now like he's meant to play golf, and that's all his brain is processing.
That's all it is. You know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and compare him to Tiger. He's doing Tiger-esque things right now, but he's got a long ways to go. But he's playing as well as anybody. You know, it's so redundant because he does it every day, but he's playing as well as anybody's played in years and years from tee to green. Tiger never played this well from tee to green because Tiger never drove it like this. His short game is phenomenal. He putted excellent last week, and so much for the naysayers about his putting. I just, you know, the one thing that stands out to me is that he hasn't gotten too big for his britches. He speaks a lot about his faith. He speaks a lot about his family, and he takes all of this in stride, and this is his job. And this is not going to make who he is. And I think some people say that, knowing full well that, you know, this is going to be how I'm remembered as a golfer, but not Scottie Scheffler. And he says it and really means it. And so he lives it. And if you live it, you go about your business like he does. And it's there's no highs and lows. There's such an even keel throughout the entire day, especially this past week when it blew just crazy on Thursday and Friday. And TV didn't do it justice how hard the golf course was, how dry and fast it got for the weekend, and how difficult it was for the players. The scores indicate that. But I think Scottie is truly phenomenal right now.
Yeah, but and to that point that you made there a second ago, and I asked this question respectfully because I think he's awesome. But is he the star that golf wants because of everything that you just described? The low-key, humble demeanor, doesn't want every endorsement opportunity out there, doesn't even really want the spotlight, but he's dominant. Like, is he the star that golf wants to be the face of this sport?
Like it or not, you got him, baby. Yeah. Let me tell you. We can't hand-pick who we want. And, you know, golf has been very, very lucky to have star power, charisma, and games over the years. And it highlighted in Tiger Woods over the last 20 years, you know, the most recognizable athlete in the world who happened to play golf. And it elevated our tour and game. He's got a great supporting cast. And, you know, and especially this guy, Ludvig Åberg. I love him. I said yesterday early, I said, you know what, if he wins or not today, probably not going to win because he's so far back. But you're going to fall in love with this kid today. And you better fall in love with him because you've been seeing him for 25 years. He's got the whole package, the body, the swing to die for, the powerful swing. Looks like a great attitude, and he's 23 years old. So, you know, we do to be 23 again. But, you know, Morikawa is such a great player and likable guy, and Max Homa is the social media genius, and everybody loves him. So there's a great supporting cast out there. And then we're going to get back to the tour as far as I'm sorry the tour is in the position it is right now. It shouldn't be in the position it is right now. And if we can get through this chaos, we're going to be in great shape for guys like Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, no, I'm glad you said that, though, because I did want to ask you about it. So let's talk about it. I talked to a guy that I think you know pretty well, Bob Herrig, longtime ESPN golf writer last week. And, you know, he pointed out, hey, 10 months ago we were announcing a merger and there's been nothing since. Right before the tournament, guys like Rory in particular were lamenting the fact that golf TV ratings were down and that he thinks that's a result of the fans not loving the split and, you know, all the drama that came along with it. I mean, are we looking at an eventual reunification? That has to happen for golf, right?
No, it really doesn't. No? I think we're so far apart now. I think they're here to stay for a while, but we don't know because I don't think the tour knows. Honestly, I'm very, very disappointed in our tour. LIV came along as this rogue tour, and it really wasn't a tour. It was going to put on 8 tournaments and buy players from the world of golf to play golf. So they bought players to go play exhibition matches. Now they play for a lot of money. I don't want to be too rude on them. But they bought players. They gave nothing to these players at all except millions of dollars. So I don't blame the players for going because they were, you know, given so much money. But when you go and keep your mouth shut. Don't try to come back and play our tour. You can't skip radio networks and come back and moonlight what you're doing today. It doesn't work in life. So, and then some of them tried to sue the tour because they couldn't. They knew what they were getting into when they went to LIV. So just go over there, be happy with your money, and miss playing in the tour itself. Now, for the tour itself, now you got me on a rant now.
I love it.
Now, the tour itself has tried to be LIV. You know, initially our commissioner said, if it's about money, we can't compete. Well, it becomes about money. And our players have become greedy players as well. And so, you know, these elevated events playing for so much money, this is putting incredible pressure on the tour and sponsors to keep these elevated events with such big purses. You know, it's just do the lesser tournaments, do they survive? Do they come a feeder tour to the 8 elevated events? There's a lot of questions out there that we just don't know what's going on, and I really don't think the tour does either. But anyway, golf's still going to survive, without a doubt. And I hope this gets over sooner rather than later, but I'm not real optimistic.
Speaking of the importance, the history, you know, Tiger had a terrible finish to the tournament, but he did make his 24th consecutive cut. Those 23 holes on Friday really seemed to do him in physically. As we're watching him play at 48 years old now, what are you seeing from Tiger? I would say, Curtis, that as a lifelong fan, it was great to see him out there, and I love that he made the cut, but it's hard to watch him fall apart physically like that.
Well, you know, as somebody who's gone through that age thing like he has, not the injuries, but the age thing. You know, you can get fired up to play, and I say this every time he plays because he just hasn't played many rounds of golf. I think the adrenaline will, especially at the Masters, will carry him through for the first round, part of the second. If he's playing decent, the adrenaline will stay there. But if you just make the cut, and I think making the cut was a victory last week. He hasn't played but one round all year long. Mm-hmm. and he's injured. His back is in bad shape. Just the whole deal. So I think making a cut was a huge victory for him, and I think he knows that too. But what does he do next? What's the goal on Saturday? And when he makes a couple bogeys, there's no energy, and he didn't play well. And it was not easy on Saturday either. Sunday, he went out there and wanted to shoot a good score. He played, you know, he hit a lot of good shots, but he just didn't score well because there was no energy. And it's hard when you're 48. And even when you're Tiger Woods, look at Jack Nicklaus, look at Arnold Palmer, look at all the greats of the game. They didn't play when they were 48 years old back in the day. So it's kind of the aging process. Now, does he continue to do that? That's the question. And I hope he does for this reason. People want to watch him play. They don't care what he shoots. They want to watch him play. They want to rub elbows with him, shake his hand, just see him, because he's been so phenomenal in sport, not just golf, but in the game of sport throughout the world over the years, and just be around him a little bit. Now, does he accept that, you know, a type of ceremonial player? We'll have to wait and see.
You've tuned in to Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.